Hello, I'm John Rossi, a touring drummer with a love of all things animal. When I'm on the road, I visit as many zoos, aquariums. Hey, wait a minute. What's going on? Hey, what's going on there? Hello? Hello?
We interrupt your regularly scheduled program to bring you Rossafari Zoo News. News you can use from the world of zoos and conservation. Every week, we bring you breaking news and analysis from around the globe, featuring the animals you love and the people who care for them. And here's your anchorman, John Rossi.
Hello. Hi. Hello. Welcome back to Rossafari Zoo News, your look at everything going on in the world of zoos, aquariums, conservation, and general animal weirdness. And hey, welcome to the last episode of the year. Woo! It is crazy to think that this is the last episode of the year. It feels like that happened just like, I don't know, a year ago? Roughly? Anyway, yeah, so this is Rossafari Zoo News, and for anyone who may be new, this is a crowdsourced news program, so if you happen to see anything you think is zoo news worthy, you can tag me in it on the socials at Rossafari, on TikTok at Rossafari Pod, or email it to me, rossafaripod@gmail.com, and then I'll say your name at the end of the episode, whether I use your story or not, which is pretty fancy, if I do say so myself. And speaking of fancy, it has been a wonderful holiday season here at Rossafari HQ, which is literally just wherever I am, because I have all of my portable recording gear and stuff. So we had a blast celebrating the holiday with the family. And actually, even though the holiday celebrations are over, my celebrating time is not over yet because Miles is currently hanging out with me at home. As a matter of fact, the morning that this episode drops, we're going to be heading to Aquarium of Niagara to go see sea lions and seals, and Miles will get to see Squirt the sea turtle. I'm trying to think. Yeah, Miles has seen sea turtles before, now that I think about it, but not since he was much younger at Adventure Aquarium, so I'm pretty excited for him to get a good look at Squirt. Should be a really, really good time. So yeah, it is really, really fun having Miles here. As a matter of fact, he may just be hopping on here in a little bit to help share something fun with y'all. Or he may not. You'll just have to listen to find out.
Dad, I'm definitely going to be on. I'm standing right here to record the part.
Dude, I'm trying to build some drama here.
Dad, everyone knows you're dramatic already.
Anyway,
let's get to it!
Alrighty, we're going to start off with our birth announcements for the week. Now, in case you didn't know this, cockerels, she-fox, are one of the rarest primates in the world, but they just became a little less rare, by one anyway. That's because the Chester Zoo has announced the birth of a baby she-fox, also known as a she-flit in my weird little world. So congratulations to the team at the Chester Zoo. Zoo Atlanta has announced the birth of a southern white rhinoceros, or a southern white rhinelet. It's the first of the species ever born at Zoo Atlanta, and it was born on Christmas Eve. Congrats to the team there. I know they have been working over the last few years to turn this hope into a reality. So it's very cool to see this birth finally happening. So yeah, it's just been fun to watch the journey of the rhinos there. And now they have a baby rhinelet. Yay! The Sydney Zoo in Australia has announced the birth of their first ever hyena cub, a hyenlet. Now, since hyenas usually hang with their moms from a very early age, the little goober is actually already out on exhibit if you would like to go see it and, you know, happen to live near Sydney, which I do not, but I really want to visit soon. And then bringing it back to the United States, Omaha's Henry Dorley Zoo has announced the birth of not one, not two, but 10 southern rockhopper penguins, which is the most of that species that has ever hatched at the zoo since they opened the penguin exhibit back in 1995. 10 births is obviously a huge deal, and of course, the Henry Dorley Zoo is incredible and very well equipped to handle this influx of new little penguins, and so congrats to the entire team at the zoo there. And then last but not least for our births this week, our friends at the North Carolina Zoo have announced the birth of an Adra gazelle calf. Or Adra gazellet, which I like a lot. Gazellet's a really good one. This is the second calf of the species born this year at the zoo. And it's another example of a super important birth because, not shockingly, this is a critically endangered species. And of course, after births, we move on to the other side of things, to the animals that we've had to say goodbye to. And we're going to start off with the fact that the Miami Seaquarium has announced the passing of Sundance, a dolphin who has lived at the facility for over 30 years. He was a beloved dolphin that had captured the hearts of many of his trainers. While the Seaquarium has come under a lot of fire lately, and rightly so, it is worth saying that the keepers and trainers that worked with him have always done their best and given a lot of themselves to him. So, you know, sending love to that team, current and former, because I know that they are very much missing their love today, and whatever other drama there is around that place, the people who have taken care of the cetaceans there are amazing and have done amazing work. And I really feel for them in this moment. Tilly, the second oldest harbor seal at Maritime Aquarium, has passed away at the age of 37. While Tilly was geriatric, they're not entirely sure what happened, so the team is still planning on performing a necropsy to figure out the exact cause of death. Tilly was known for her sweet personality, very big eyes, and very petite stature. From the time Tilly got sick until she passed, her team provided around-the-clock care for her, which is always a beautiful thing to see, but also sad when you know, it has to end this way. So, sending love to the team there. The next one's tough, y'all. The next one's tough. The North Carolina Zoo has announced the passing of Fenn, their beloved six-month-old giraffe calf, who I announced the birth of on this podcast roughly 6 months ago. Fenn was nursing as normal when he was startled by another giraffe. He bolted and collided with a nearby gate, causing him to fall to the ground, where he suffered head and neck trauma. The team intervened immediately, but it wasn't enough, and Fenn sadly passed away. This is such a horrible loss for the team and for the zoo. I feel so terribly for them. The zoo is amazing and has brought in a grief counselor for the staff and are helping them process. But I know I already have plans to head back to North Carolina next year, and I know I'm going to miss seeing that sweet little giraffe face so much. Fenn was super duper special, y'all. And then our last goodbye this week is another really special one out of Sea Life, Sunshine Coast, where the team had to say goodbye to Groucho, the Australian fur seal. Groucho was 24 at the time of his passing, and you have heard about Groucho and the other fur seals at the aquarium there if you listened to my episode with Daisy Barrett. She's one of the ones with the Aussie accent, if it's not ringing a bell. Groucho had a long, healthy life, but age-related issues did lead to his health deteriorating, and so now he is no longer with us. Sending love to the entire team at Sea Life Sunshine Coast. All right. And that's it for our births and deaths this week. And so in our general Zoo News segment. We got a couple of stories here. One of my general rules is that I have stopped announcing when facilities start displaying new species, unless it is really rare, a really unique species, or something that I really want to announce, like whenever zoos start housing red pandas or binturongs or tree kangaroos. You know, it's my podcast after all. But hey, the new display I'm about to tell you about is very, very newsworthy. The San Diego Zoo has started displaying Lord Howe Island stick insects at their Wildlife Explorers base camp. This is the first time these insects have ever been displayed in North America. In fact, the San Diego Zoo is one of only two zoos outside of Australia to display them in the entire world. Now, this insect is critically endangered and was actually believed to be extinct in the wild until a few individuals were discovered back in 2001. At that time, two pairs of the insects were taken to the Australian mainland for breeding, with one of the pairs going to the Melbourne Zoo. The Melbourne Zoo has a partnership with the San Diego Zoo and eventually brought some eggs to San Diego to continue breeding. And now the San Diego Zoo is able to display some of them from that whole breeding situation. And of course, they continue to work on breeding this critically endangered species behind the scenes as well. So it's a very cool opportunity to go see a very unique species if you go to the San Diego Zoo right now. Man, I miss that place. That is a special, special zoo. Okay, so there are a few of these like compilation stories going around right now since it's the end of the year that recap some stories of the year and stuff like that. And one of the ones that I saw is a story that I apparently missed out of Busch Gardens. So back in May, a person who is considered a nano influencer online, meaning someone with like a very small following, but still a following, jumped into the alligator exhibit at Busch Gardens to, you know, make a video and try to get clicks. I did actually report on that back then. But what I missed and what I thought was worth mentioning in this episode is that after that happened, the zoo built a new fence to keep other people from repeating this stupidity, because apparently alligators aren't enough to stop people from jumping into an alligator habitat. What is happening to our world? But anyway, what cracked me up is Busch Gardens made the news for saying that they had created an influencer-proof fence. I personally think we need more fences like that in the world. Let's just fence off areas and make them influencer-proof. Yeah, sounds good to me, right? Anyway, moving on from that. The Jacksonville Zoo recently experienced something that was absolutely terrifying. The vestibule of their lorikeet aviary burned down. As of now, the zoo is unsure of what caused the fire, but no humans or animals were hurt during the fire, which is kind of incredible. The zoo has promised to update everyone when they have finished their investigation, of course. And while this is a happy story in terms of the lack of loss of life, I cannot imagine how terrifying it must be for the keepers that went through this experience. So I just want to take a moment to thank them for the amazing work that they do and that they did and everything, making sure that all the animals were safe. And just in general, say, you know, congratulations on being awesome. Yeah, it's crazy to think about just a fire at the zoo and no one knows what happened. It's scary and crazy. And the Jacksonville Zoo, y'all have heard them on here. They are an incredible facility. So I'm sure they'll get to the bottom of this. But yeah, sending love to that team. And man, I'm grateful that this isn't a much sadder story. Congrats are in order for Utah's Hogle Zoo, which has been honored with the prestigious Green Business Award from Utah Business Magazine. This award is given in recognition of the zoo's unwavering dedication to environmental sustainability, air quality improvement, and emissions reduction, using green practices like the reduction of single-use plastics, solar array usage, and reducing their carbon footprint. Now, these are all awesome things, and it is awesome that the zoo is getting recognition for them. I do want to point out that, it is true that lots and lots of zoos that we talk about do this kind of thing. But they got the recognition. They're in the magazine. So, yay, Hogle Zoo. All right. And this next one is one of those stories that I love to share because it shows just how far zoos go for their animals, even when they aren't the most charismatic species, even though in this case, it's a species that I personally find to be wildly charismatic. Queenie, the Aldabra tortoise, recently became ill at the Toronto Zoo. She was not eating or moving as much as usual, and this was on top of the fact that the team had been monitoring a slow-growing mass just under her skin. Now, the mass was not invading muscle, and there was no indication that it was bothering her, so they were just monitoring the situation. However, with the other signs of illness that the tortoise was showing and the mass continuing to grow, the decision was made to anesthetize Queenie, remove the mass, and place a feeding tube. The surgery went super well. The feeding tube is working not only to get her eating better, but to administer pain meds and antibiotics, and Queenie seems to be doing much better. Now, since tortoises tend to do everything slowly, including heal, she will be off exhibit for quite a while as she recovers from these issues, but it looks like Queenie is well on her way to recovery. This is an over 50-year-old Aldabra tortoise, and the team just, all this cool stuff just to give her the best life. I love it so, so, so much. This next story is kind of interesting. So I saw a social media post from Charles Paddock Zoo recently that caught my attention. Okay, and admittedly, that's not, super surprising. I mostly just look at zoo Instagrams nowadays. But what is surprising is why it caught my attention. It had nothing to do with animals or the zoo or conservation or any of that stuff. Instead, there was a problem going on with the local 911 service, which was making it so that landlines were not able to connect to 911. As such, the zoo put up a post letting people know about the issue, telling them to either call 911 from a cell phone if they were having an emergency, or to call the local number for the Atascadero Fire and Police, and how even to reach the dispatcher if they had to go that route, because they only had a landline available to them. And I thought that was cool to see. This is a small community and a popular zoo in that community, and I thought it was cool that they, dedicated a social media post to sharing about the issue going on that had nothing to do with them. Very cool. Very good work. The Birmingham Zoo will be celebrating New Year's Eve by having Jingles the Monkey climb down a vine to welcome in 2024. Now, don't worry, it's not a real monkey, as that could be a challenge to train and time out properly. Instead, it's a plush monkey that will be making the descent down the vine, similarly to how the ball drops in New York City, only with much, much more cuteness. It's actually a weird thing in central Pennsylvania where a lot of towns do their own, like, New Year's-style ball drop, including the town I grew up in, Mechanicsburg, which is named for the mechanics that lived there back in the day. They drop a wrench, and Dillsburg, you guessed it, they drop a pickle. Now, I realize that has nothing to do with zoos, but I feel like to the people around the U.S. and especially around the world who now know that these small towns in central Pennsylvania drop things like wrenches and pickles, I don't know. I think that's something that's worth knowing. Maybe just to laugh at us. I don't know. But that's what's going to be happening at the Birmingham Zoo. And one of the cool things about this is that they'll be doing it earlier in the day, with the festivities to ring in the, quote, New Year, end quote, happening at 2 p.m. This is actually something that a lot of zoos are doing this year, so it's worth checking if your local zoo is going to do something like this, because I think it's pretty cool that you can, go to a zoo, go early and get your New Year's celebration in case you want to, you know, go to bed early that night or have children or whatever. Just want to celebrate twice? I don't know. But yeah, you can go to your local zoo and possibly ring in the New Year at some crazy random time, you know, in the afternoon. But hey, it's midnight somewhere, as the song says, only differently because it says 5 o'clock. And is about drinking. Well, I guess for a lot of people, New Year's is also about drinking. But, you know, not for me. So, whatever. Anyway, I'm rambling. all right. Got two more stories in the Zoo News section. First of all, I have a quick update on the story of the escaped Nashville Zoo lions that we discussed last week. You know, the story in which it went viral that lions had escaped from the Nashville Zoo because of a photo that was going around the internet that was not from Nashville, and that was extra annoying because the Nashville Zoo doesn't even have lions? That story? Well, it seems like the people spreading the fake story realized that the lack of lions at Nashville made it harder for people to swallow. So they put out the exact same story with the exact same picture, but now claiming it was the lions had escaped the Indianapolis Zoo. That was it in terms of what they changed. And I admit it was an improvement in terms of it being a zoo that actually does have lions. So I guess that's a step in the right direction. But everything else was still a lie. And the Indianapolis Zoo did release a statement, you know, stating that their lions were still in their homes and happy and all of that stuff. And it seems like in general, the story didn't go nearly as viral as it did the first time with Nashville, possibly because of the first one also being out there and viral, and possibly, you know, because it was a big dumb lie that people did. But yeah, so just wanted to put that out into the world in case you've heard anything about the Indianapolis Zoo losing their lions. They didn't. Gotta hate people sometimes. But not all people and not all of the times, which this last story will point out to y'all. Last but not least in Zoo News this week, we have some very important and exciting news out of the Denver Zoo, where Ali Malensky has officially been named the 2024 volunteer chair. Now, Ali has been volunteering at the zoo for the last 5 years, where she serves as a docent, an animal handler, and also a volunteer on the animal behavior observation team. Wait, does that mean she just gets to sit and look at animals? Because that's what everyone at the zoo does. Okay, probably doesn't mean that. She probably gets a clipboard, too. But anyway, as you all know, Ali is also a regular contributor to Zoo News, sending something in every single week and becoming a bit of a star on the podcast because I regularly do something weird when announcing her name in the thank yous at the end. So yeah, everyone here at the Raw Safari podcast is incredibly proud of the work Ali does, and we all can't wait to hear about the impact she has as this year's volunteer chair at the Denver Zoo. That's just awesome.
Stereotypical animal podcast theme song. Here to bring you to conservation news.
All right, so scientists are currently proposing an interesting plan to protect owls. The killing off of owls? Okay, don't worry, this one does make sense, I promise. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is currently proposing shooting 470,000 barred owls in forests throughout the West Coast over the next 30 years. That's because they are currently crowding out spotted owls, which are birds that are actually native to the area. Barred owls are an invasive species in this area that have made their homes in the forests that spotted owls call home, and honestly are thriving much more than the spotteds ever did, at least in our recorded history. They're thriving so much so, in fact, that the spotted owl is now in danger of going extinct in the next few years if this intervention doesn't take place. And I have to say this is the kind of conservation story that I love and hate all at once. I'm not going to lie about it. I totally understand and respect the need to eliminate invasive species, especially when they are literally causing the extinction of a native species. but I also kind of hate it just on an emotional level. And I want to be clear, I'm saying that not to say that I disagree with the proposal. I don't. But I wanted to say that because I know these stories don't always sit right with people, you know, people that are listening, even people who understand the science behind it. And I want you to know that I also have those feelings. I do. Even if I understand that we have to let scientists do their sciencey things without, you know, worrying about our feelings. We'll all feel bad if a species goes extinct because we don't step in and we could have. I did just want to say that I hear those stories sometimes and I'm like, icky. That's icky. Yeah. Anyway, but here's actually another story that helps illustrate the whole point of, you know, dealing with invasive species, right? Invasive species are tough, y'all. The South American tegu is a large lizard. It can be up to 4 feet long that lives in, you guessed it, South America and South Carolina, apparently. So it seems that some owners who got baby tegus and didn't realize what they were getting into have been releasing the animals into the wilds of South Carolina once the babies became not babies and became too hard to take care of. As such, there is a growing population of this invasive species that eats bird eggs and also carries salmonella that is starting to grow in South Carolina. There are currently 24 confirmed sightings of now wild tegus in the state, but over 100 different reports of potential tegu that have been made and the animal just hasn't been seen by the government when they go to check it out. So as such, the government is trying to step in before this can become a breeding population that wreaks havoc on the environment in the state. So let's not get exotic animals for pets. I know you guys know that, but I have to say it. And it's you know, another example of an animal that might need to be taken in or even taken care of in order to stop a lot of birds dying and having population issues and humans getting sick. And then last but not least, in conservation news, there have been 5 new hedgehog species discovered recently. And if that isn't cool enough, they are soft-furred hedgehogs. Soft-furred hedgehogs are members of the group Hylomys, and they live in Southeast Asia. There were only 2 previously known species, so now there are 7. And as you can imagine, what sets Hylomys apart from other hedgehogs is that they have soft fur instead of the spines that most other hedgehogs have. It's always amazing to me when they discover not just a new species, but multiple new species. It really goes to show just how much incredible biodiversity there is out there that we still have yet to discover, which is a nice, hopeful way to end this section.
In other news.
So here's a unique story out of New York City. I debated putting this in the zoo news section, but technically it's not anymore. Remember the story of Flacco? No, I don't mean the former Baltimore Ravens quarterback who won my team a Super Bowl and is now taking the Cleveland Browns to the playoffs in one of the best comeback stories in recent sports memory. I'm referring to the Eurasian eagle owl who escaped from the Central Park Zoo and has been living in New York City ever since then. Well, it turns out that Flacco is a bit of a problem child now. It seems like even though he does appear to be hunting and eating well, he might be missing people. Quite a lot, actually. He has been found repeatedly sitting outside of windows, staring at the people inside the houses, earning him the nickname of a Peeping Tom. He will sit there for hours just watching people. And to be clear, that's the thing. He really is watching them the whole time, not just sleeping near the window. Apparently, he'll even stay longer if you talk to him through the window, but he hisses if people get too close, even like with the window glass closed. So based on reports, it seems that Flacco is doing well in all other regards, but this is definitely not a typical behavior for a wild owl. and it shows how animals that live in human care really don't thrive back when left to their own devices unless they are, you know, specifically raised in a program with reintroduction in mind. All right, and finally, in other news this week, we have very special guest Miles Rossi, the son, on to give his thoughts on a movie that we saw recently. So, Miles, what movie that was animal-related did we go see recently?
Migration!
Okay, let's not scream into the microphone. But yes, we went and saw Migration, which is a story about some anthropomorphic ducks who decide to migrate. So, Miles, do you recommend this movie for listeners of the podcast?
Yes, I recommend it 5 stars.
5 stars? Wow. What was your favorite part?
I don't know. Probably the part where they're like, no, we're not leaving the pond. And then the next day, they're like, okay, we're going to leave the pond.
Okay, so pretty much the beginning of the movie. That works. All right. And did you have a favorite character? It's okay if you don't remember the name.
Yeah, it's the...
The baby?
Yeah, like the little duck.
Yeah, the baby.
It was not a baby.
It was a baby.
How would it talk then?
How... you stumped me because you're right. Babies can't talk. Guess what else can't talk?
Animals?
Ducks. That's right. Do you know what noises ducks do make?
Quack, quack.
Yeah, I know you knew that. I just wanted you to quack on the podcast. Okay, cool. Well, there you have it, folks. A 5-star review for Migration. Is there anything else that you want to say to the listeners? Like maybe happy...
happy birthday.
Try again.
Happy New Year.
Good. All right, buddy. Thanks.
Oh, animal, oh, animal, animal holidays. Animal, oh, animal, animal holidays. Hey!
All right. So as we start this section, it is still December, the animal-less month. Boo. But that ends in 2 days, and then we move on to January, which is... also a month without any month-long animal celebrations. Another animal-less month. Boo again. But hey, at least we have our individual days for the week, such as ones that will start next week. We get nothing the whole first week, y'all. Dumb. And those are very, very much not your animal holidays for the week. All right, the last Zoo News episode of Rossafari for 2023 is officially over. That's crazy talk. I would like to say thank you to my Red Panda level patrons, Dr. Laura Schenk, Dr. Stephen Williamson, and Barbara Bennett. And of course, say thank you to all of my patrons. I love you all very much. I also hope that everyone listening enjoyed the patron bonus audio episode that I dropped on Tuesday. It's always fun to hear those things. And hey, I know this episode was a little short, but as you heard, I got family stuff to do. And also, very few people listen the last week of the year compared to every other week. So, you know, even have a shorter list here than we normally do for the contributors this week. But I do want to say thank you to the people who did contribute, including Anya Keen, Colleen Lenahan, Kim Cooley Croninger, Carrie Kirkpatrick, Kevin Williams, Nicole Johnson, Elizabeth Vickery, Elizabeth Dunleavy, Dr. Laura Schenk, Ali Malensky, Emily Rockbuck, Jay Meredith, Crystal Chapman, and Marianne Rossi. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Wait, 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 wait. We said Ali Malensky. Quick. Let me frantically search my list here. I don't see a K Malensky. Okay, hold on. Let me go to my messages. I know that Kay did not forget to send me something this week because she has said that she would never want to be abused at the end of the credits because she forgot to send me something this week. So let me go into the messages and see what she... There's nothing. So just to make sure that we are perfectly clear on this, when it comes to the Malenskys, Allie has gotten a position of import at the Denver Zoo, and Kay is ending the year on my naughty list. Can y'all believe it? Okay, so I need to stop for a second and just say, first of all, nobody ever needs to send me stuff every week. And second of all, I have been telling the Malensky girls for a while now that I would pick on them any way that I could and have fun with this any way that I could, especially if they forgot. So if you are a new listener or a regular contributor who is worried that I will throw you under the bus and then drive forward and back up and drive forward and back up and drive forward and back up like I am doing with Kay right now, don't worry, it is not going to happen. And this is just a fun little thing that I do with these people. Like my friend, Allie Malensky, the awesome Malensky, and not my friend, Kay Malensky, the not awesome, not friend, bad person who makes me want to go to her. I'm kidding. I'm probably kidding. All right. Well, I guess that means that we have to end the year on a sad note. Just remember, guys, the word Snoozy credits backwards are Steinergiswen.
The Rossifari Podcast is produced, hosted, and engineered by John Rossi. Editing and fact-checking by John and Dr. Zoe Rossi. Our theme song is Sevens by Nathan Burke, performed by Nathan and John. Interrupting John theme and additional voices by Taylor Isaac Gray. You can reach John directly on Instagram and Facebook at Rossifari or by email at rossifaripod@gmail.com. Rossifari is part of the Daydreamer Media Network. Now, stop listening to me and go visit a zoo.
And maybe I'm going to call my friend named Bob here to ask how he liked it. Ring, 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 ring.
Remember when I say don't improvise on my podcast?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're not doing that.
Darn.
Is there anything?
Can this be a cutscene?